You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to get grocery shopping tips from a woman who's probably inspected every label at the grocery store. She and her book will help you grocery shop without going broke. But no, sorry, she can't help remind you to bring your reusable bags. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you know me but at all, or have spent but a few seconds skimming my Instagram or my recipes, you'll know that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the bees to my knees, the Wilson to my castaway. Okay, it's a product I wouldn't want to live without. Are you looking for a way to make your smoothies actually fill you up so you don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing your smoothie? Blend in Sun Warrior. Do you not want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder? Switch to Sun Warrior. Are you not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors? Use Sun Warrior. There is a reason I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into every baked good I bake. And that reason is, well, there are many reasons. So head to the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/35 to read all about the many reasons and to find out how you can get started with Sun Warrior. If you've ever gotten lost in the grocery store, both literally like you're trapped in aisle four, or mentally like you feel like you have no idea what to put into your cart or why, you're gonna be happy you listened to this episode. Because Maria Marlowe, my guest today and the first Party in My Plants podcast returning guest, woo woo woo, is a grocery store guru, if that's a thing. I mean, she has a whole 260-page plus book on how to buy real food at the grocery store, so I would assume that makes her a grocery store guru. Last time Maria was on the show, she spoke about how our food affects our face, and she stressed the importance of eating clean shiz to clean up your skin. Well, that's all well and good, except if you don't know how to purchase clean shiz to eat, you and your skin and your gut and yourself are shiz out of luck. Sorry to break it to you. But no more do you have to feel like a foreign tourist in the grocery store or get home and try to spiralize a cucumber that you bought instead of a zucchini, because Maria's here to drop some knowledge bombs on how to be the bomb.com at grocery shopping. Maria, welcome back to the Party in My Plants podcast.
Happy to be here.
You are my first repeat guest. You know, how does that make you feel?
That feels pretty amazing. I must say, I love your podcast, so I'm super psyched to be back so soon.
Thanks. You should feel so honored.
I am.
Just kidding. But I have to say, as of this moment, your first episode on the show, How Food Affects Our Face, is holding down the fort at number 7 of the most popular Party My Plants episodes.
That's pretty cool. I'm glad to hear that.
So many people tell me how much they love it.
Well, good. I'm glad we're helping people realize how food affects everything.
Yes. So, you know, it's interesting because your first episode was about, you know, skin and beauty and all that stuff. But now you're back to chat about grocery shopping because your book, The Real Food Grocery Guide, comes out super duper soon, or it's even out depending on when someone's listening to this.
Yes, that's true. The official published date is June 1st, but it is already available for pre-order on Amazon, or really pre-order at any bookstore.
That's so exciting. And I'm really, really curious because, you know, I've known you as the clean food beauty expert. And like I said, your last podcast chat with me was about beauty, and you're just like the go-to beauty gal. So I'm curious what compelled you to write a grocery shopping guide.
So this is pretty interesting. I never set out to write a grocery shopping guide. And, you know, I always wanted to write a book, but definitely was not thinking it was going to be about grocery shopping. But this was really just born out of the questions that I was getting from my clients and the popularity of my grocery shopping tour. So for a long time, I offered a service, which was taking my clients for 1.5, 2 hours through their local grocery store and helping them figure out what foods to pick up, what foods to leave on the shelf. How do you decipher food packaging labels? How do you choose the best produce? You know, do you need to spend more money on organic? And all of these questions that people had: is low fat better than no fat or full fat? And so all of these questions sort of, I just realized I kept getting them over and over and over again. And so I decided to put them into a book, and the Real Food Grocery Guide was born. And in a nutshell, it's the most practical, easy to use guide to selecting the healthiest foods in every aisle of the grocery store without going broke.
I like that. The last part, without going broke, because that is very important. That's so interesting that you used to give grocery store tours. So you would literally just take one client through the grocery store, and the same way that like you would take a bus through New York City and there's a tour guide cracking jokes and saying, on your left is this, you would be like, on your left are the sprouted grain tortillas.
Exactly, pretty much. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but you know, if you think about it, in the grocery store, especially more of a mainstream grocery store, there's just so many things and it can be so overwhelming with all of the buzzwords and, you know, the marketing on packages and, you know, organic and natural and gluten-free and vegan, vegetarian, cage-free, free-range, pasture-raised, 72% dark chocolate. It's like you just go crazy with all these things and, you know, you don't even really know what all of these words actually mean. And, you know, for example, you know, gluten-free. So gluten-free means simply that an item does not contain gluten. However, that does not automatically mean it's healthy, right? So sometimes a lot of these words kind of get confused and we don't really know the exact meaning of it. And certain foods just develop this healthy halo around them because the marketers are using these buzzwords that we think, oh, that must mean it's healthy. But no, you know, a gluten-free cookie is still a cookie. So it's, you know, really figuring out what do all these words mean and how do you really decide if a product is healthy and worthy of being consumed by you.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for writing this because it is very stressful and it is very confusing. And I don't feel like there is a book like this in existence before yours. I mean, which is kind of crazy to think about. Why didn't this exist before you created it? But I really do think you created the first real grocery food guide.
Yes, I know. It's sort of crazy too. And again, it was sort of like, you know, I had clients, you know, come back to me, you know, and just ask me, like, I just spent 2 hours in, you know, Whole Foods picking up every single package. And it was so frustrating. I can't believe I spent so much time there. Can you just like tell me exactly what to eat? And so yes, each chapter covers a different aisle of the grocery store, whether that's produce or grains and legumes and nuts and seeds. There is also some animal products in here if you consume animal products. Just how do you choose the healthiest version of everything?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the animal products is one of the most important parts of your book because, you know, there aren't nearly as many words we have to filter through to choose our plants. You know, there's just a few. Mm-hmm. But for fish and beef and dairy and poultry or whatever, there are words galore. I mean, there's natural, grass-fed, wild, organic, free range, and it's crazy. So I'm curious, what were some of the biggest takeaways for you from this chapter?
Yeah. So the animal section is kind of interesting because the terms are not necessarily the same across the board. So sometimes I'll go to a restaurant and I'll see organic fish on the menu. And I'm always just like sort of roll my eyes a little bit because organic fish probably doesn't mean what you think it means.
Tell us, what does it mean?
So, you know, the organic when it comes to seafood is not a very highly like a regulated term. So like in other animal products, so for example, organic meats or chicken, they have to be given an organic diet. Whereas the seafood, they're not necessarily given organic feed. So by other standards, like it doesn't necessarily match up to the other organic animal quality standards. And so I think, in my opinion, a better term to look for on fish would actually be wild. And wild. So a lot of people don't realize seafood is conventionally farmed, just the way we have cattle farms and, you know, chicken farms and things like that. Seafood is farmed.
It's weird to think about. Like, that doesn't seem intuitive. You don't imagine fish in a farm, you know, like you think of, like, you know, Finding Nemo swimming around, hanging out, you know, chatting with his friends, looking for his dad, or however the story works. Right. But we don't really see them farm. So when you say farm, they're just, you know, there's actual, like, farms. They're just not on a prairie. They're just caged in the water.
They're in a body of water. Yes. And, you know, some of the farms are in sort of man-made pools or bodies of water, whereas others are actually, they'll be in a natural body of water, like in a lake, let's say, but they basically the farmers will sort of cordon off, like put nets around the area where they're farming the fish.
Right. So wild means what?
So wild fish, technically, they're not truly wild. So it's not like, you know, your idea of, like, oh, there's a fisherman out on a rowboat in the middle of the water, you know, with his, you know, fishing pole.
Yeah.
Wild fish do are typically still raised in a sort of controlled environment. But the difference between wild and farmed is that they're not treated with antibiotics, hormones, pesticides, or vaccines. So the regular sort of farmed fish, they can be given all of these things. And so by choosing wild, you're avoiding ones that have been treated with those things.
Wow. I mean, that right there is worth buying the book. I mean, this information isn't really boiled down that simply. And it's really confusing and stressful for somebody like me, too. What do we do about dairy? Is dairy just organic? Is that what we want to look for, essentially?
Well, there are quite a few things to think about with dairy, but I think one of the most interesting things and sort of a big misconception I think people have around dairy is low fat versus full fat. Mm-hmm. Well, first, let me say I do recommend organic, you know, sort of across the board for animal products, with the exception of fish, right? So fish you want wild, but other animal products you want organic.
Okay.
And in terms of, yes, which types of dairy you're consuming, it turns out, even though there has been this sort of big push towards low-fat and no-fat dairy, what people don't realize is that when you take the fat out of a product that has fat, you're basically taking out the flavor. Mm. And so in order to make you want to eat it, something has to be added back in to make it more palatable. So if you were to, for example, compare, you know, the same brand, the same type of yogurt, a, you know, full fat sort of regular version versus the no fat or low fat version, you're going to find a significantly higher amount of sugar in the low fat or no fat version mm-hmm. compared to the full fat. And that's because when they take the fat out, they usually
put
add
the
sugar back in.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with reduced fat cheese. Now, of course, this is, you know, you could find a low fat or no fat yogurt or cheese that doesn't have the excess or added sugar or salt. But for the most part, majority, they are going to have a lot of extra sugar, a lot of extra salt. So same thing with low fat and no fat cheeses. If you compare the same exact amount of the full fat versus the low or no fat, you're going to find the low or no fat is much higher in sodium as well.
You are such a nerd.
Yes, I know. I've read every label in the grocery store.
My God, how did you do all the research for this book? Because, I mean, it's a thick book, man. Like, this is not like when you say guide, all right, let's just say this is not like stapled together with one staple and you can flip through it. It's like, you know, we're talking. Well, let me see. The book I have, I don't know if this is like the final copy, but the book I have is like over 260 pages.
Yeah, I know. My editor was like, I wanted more. I wanted a spice section, but we had to cut the spice section, unfortunately. That was one of my favorite chapters and a superfood chapter. There's just so much to write. I mean, this is really sort of years of research sort of compiled, and you'll see like the reference section. There are tons and tons of studies in the back. Food is just, I don't know, I'm a nerd. I'm a food nerd. What can I say? A nutrition nerd. And I just find it fascinating, you know, like how we're, you know, making food and, you know, food policy and just everything around food and nutrition and what we're consuming. I just find it very interesting. So I've sort of, you know, took my magnifying glass through every single aisle of the grocery store and figured out what do we need to know? What are the health benefits of this food? What are the health concerns of this food? Like, what do you want to know before you're eating this? And then how do you select the best version of whatever it is?
It's awesome. I mean, thank you, because I hate this stuff. I just like stuff that tastes good and makes me feel good. And I am the opposite of like wanting to do the research. So thank you for doing it for me.
You know, that's a great thing. I feel like once you sort of know what to choose, or basically how to select things, you know, you know that for the rest of your life, right? So you can always make the better choice.
Right. Totally. So how long did it take for you to write this book?
I mean, this book, I want to say, has been close to like 3 years in the making, from initial seed planted to actually being published on June 1st. So it, you know, interestingly, like the book itself, like the content sort of flowed very freely and it came very quickly. But the whole process of making a book takes a very long time, to, you know, polishing it and making sure all your chapters are sort of standardized. And, you know, there's all different editors and it's, you know, all these other publishers and things that you don't think about play a part in sort of lengthening that process.
Right. And photos. The photos are great.
Yeah, the photos. That was a really fun shoot, shooting all the photos, like all the chapter openers and stuff.
Yeah. I'm just going to tell you this. The one for sweets and snacks. Is that the section? Oh my God. It's like a 2-page spread. And it just, every time I look at it, I'm just starving, because I'd see those dates rolled in coconut just making eye contact with me. And I'm just salivating. Oh my God. What are some of your rules or guidelines for eating healthy sweets?
I highly recommend, I think the healthiest type of sweet we can eat is definitely fruit-based. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're craving a brownie, an orange is not going to cut it. I totally understand that.
So, thank you.
Yeah. So in that case, I think, you know, if we could get a little bit creative, we can turn fruit into more interesting desserts, whether that's a recipe you make yourself or, you know, even store-bought. There are a lot of options now. So you mentioned date rolls. Date rolls are one of my favorite recommendations for people who have sweet cravings or just want something sweet, because they're essentially just two simple ingredients, which is dates and coconut, or sometimes nuts. Mm-hmm. And they taste like a dessert. They don't taste like a fruit, because they are, you know, they're made into a paste and then they're rolled in coconut. And like when you're biting into them, it feels very like rich and decadent. And you feel like you're eating a dessert, even though you're technically eating a fruit.
Right.
And so I feel like it satisfies that sweet craving, and you don't feel like you're being boring or you're missing out or you're being deprived. So date rolls or just dates are great. And you can even stuff a date. I know you like stuffing nut butter. Even nuts or orange peel. Oh. So dates are great.
And you mentioned dates are great for skin. In your last interview, you were big on the dates being good for skin.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're great for digestion as well.
Yeah.
And so I think they're, you know, they're a great food, especially for someone who's trying to get off of the refined and processed sugars. They make a great addition to the diet. You know, sometimes people are scared of dates because they look a little different. Yeah. they look a little different. And so I would recommend trying like the date rolls first, because those look more like candy. And then, you know, make your way to the actual date.
So this is interesting, because your book actually has no recipes in it, which I found surprising. However, it kind of has recipes without recipes, because for each plant, you'll tell us ways to make it without actually taking us through a recipe, which I actually prefer, because, you know, we don't need more recipes in the world, A, and B, I think what people really need is the confidence to just be able to take a plant and turn it into food without a recipe, without measuring, without all the crazy, you know, stress. So, I mean, I love that in your book, you tell us ways to eat the plants that you described and tell us why they're healthy without, you know, listing out like 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt and half a tablespoon of maple syrup.
I'm so glad that you acknowledge and like that. And yes, so I didn't want to include any recipes because, my goodness, my publisher and editor would have killed me for making the book even longer. But, you know, I always tell people, you know, who are starting to cook more plant-based, that if you basically chop any vegetable up and you saute it with garlic and olive oil, it's going to taste good.
Right.
And you know, you don't need like a very complicated recipe. You can just simply roast it or saute it and it will probably taste good. You know, if you put a little oil and a little bit of like a high quality salt, like a pink salt or Celtic salt, and, you know, maybe some spices, it's very easy. And you don't have to be intimidated by vegetables, because I know, like, you know, looking at a head of cauliflower, like, that doesn't necessarily register as food to some right. people. They're like, what do I do with this? And if you, all you have to do is chop it up, you know, bake it or saute it, add some spices, and it's delicious. So I wanted to really, you know, encourage people to experiment, maybe even try, you know, one new fruit or vegetable each week that they've never, you know, had before, and just experiment with having it in different ways to yeah. add variety to the diet.
It's great. And interestingly enough, you mentioned oil a second ago, sauteing in olive oil, but you list avocado oil as one of your healthiest oils in the book, which I've never used avocado oil.
So avocado oil is an incredible oil because it's very neutral. So you can kind of use it anywhere without it imparting a very strong flavor. And it's great for high heat cooking. So traditionally, like a lot of vegetable oils, like the very highly processed vegetable oils, are recommended for high heat cooking because they're more stable when you're cooking on high temperatures. You know, for example, you wouldn't want to use olive oil when cooking on high heat because it's going to degrade the oil and then the oil becomes unhealthy. Mm-hmm. But avocado oil is mechanically extracted. So it's extracted in like a very pure, easy way that there's no added chemicals like some of the other vegetable oils.
What does that mean? How do they do it? They just squish it out of the avocado?
I don't know the exact process, but yeah. I know that there's not chemicals involved.
Interesting. In it. Okay. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they yeah. would just squish it out. I'm going with that.
Yes, that sounds very appetizing. So it can handle the high heat, so you don't have to worry about it degrading when you're cooking things on a super high temperature. And yes, it's, you know, it doesn't impart that flavor. So I think avocado oil is a great addition to, whether for cooking, you could even use it in dressings if you wanted a neutral flavor. And it's a great oil just to add to your repertoire or to your pantry.
See, you know so much about so much. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
And well, you can know all these things too if you read the book.
I know, and I'm learning. And it's, I mean, not to, you know, be too like infomercially, but it really is a very easy to read book. And it's funny because you dedicate it to, quote, anyone who's ever been confused about what to eat.
Well, yeah, which is pretty much everyone,
which
right?
is literally everyone. So I think that's hilarious. What have you found are like some of the biggest areas of confusion for people around what to eat from your grocery store tours?
Well, I think that, you know, one thing that is and is not surprising, because I personally, I think if you remember from the last podcast, I really did not eat a vegetable until I was about 18. Yeah. A lot of people don't know what certain sort of more common vegetables and fruits and things are.
Really?
And herbs. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting and sort of telling, because we're so used to getting our food out of packages that we don't really know what it looks like in its natural form. And so that's always a little bit interesting. I think there's a lot of confusion about packaged foods and how to read a label. I think there's a very big focus on calories and grams of fat, and people just zero in on that and they sort of block out everything else. But in the book, I really explain why that's not necessarily the best idea, because a calorie is not necessarily a calorie. They're not all created equal. And if you think about, you know, 100 calories of, you know, kale or almonds versus 100 calories of even that vegan gluten-free cookie, they're not going to do the same thing in your body. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're metabolized differently. They affect your mood. They affect your satiety. They affect everything, your health, differently. And so simply looking at the calories is really a very incomplete picture. And I really recommend looking at the ingredient list first. And are the ingredients in that list, are they real food? Are they things that you would actually stock in your kitchen? Or are they things that you can't even pronounce, or you don't even know what they are, or where they come from? And so it really teaches you what to sort of look out for and avoid, as well as what you do want to look for and what are good ingredients to have in your packaged foods. Because, of course, real food, you know, the food that comes, you know, whole without a package, your fruits and vegetables and grains, legumes, all these things, of course, they're the healthiest food. But it's 2017. We all have busy, hectic lives. So I think it's silly to think that we're not going to eat packaged foods ever. But, you know, when we are eating those packaged foods, we just have to make sure that we're eating the highest quality, best real foods that we can find.
Yeah. And so you're saying, which I totally do and support and believe in, but you're saying to really just jute your eyes right down to the ingredients label. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. Definitely. On packaged food, not calories. Just go right to the ingredients. And in regards to ingredients, do you have sort of like your number of how many ingredients you don't want to go over? Like, roughly, is that something you care about, or is it all about what the ingredients are?
Well, I definitely think simpler is better. So fewer ingredients is always great. But I don't know that there's necessarily a specific number, because what if there is like a 10 spice, I don't know, something, and then, you know, you're already
touché
over your number. So I think it's hard to say a number. I think it's more just making sure that the ingredients in there are whole versus refined or processed or, you know, chemical additives. And those are sort of the things that I would suggest looking out for versus, you know, counting a specific number.
Right. All right, fine. Touche. Touche. Yeah. So this isn't clearly like a vegan book or anything, or even, you know, a plant-based book, because like we say, you hit on meats, dairy, all that stuff, right? But do you in general recommend, like, is it a plant-based book? Or, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question. So I do feel like it is a plant-based book in a way. I mean, definitely my produce and plant-based section takes up the majority of the book and gets all the sort of beautiful photos and everything. I included, you know, animal products because and if you kind of look through the chapters, I do suggest them in limited quantities and definitely thinking about replacing some of your protein requirements with plant-based proteins versus always animal-based proteins. Mm-hmm. And I do think a plant-based way of eating is the healthiest way to go. I think there's a lot that nutrition, you know, professionals disagree on, but one thing that's pretty universal at this point is that having at least 50% of your plate plants is one of the best things that you can do for your health. That's the USDA guidelines. And pretty much, again, amongst all sort of nutrition bodies, researchers, everything, they're going to, I think, encourage you towards eating more plants. Then that other half of the plate, that's where things get a little bit different. Some are going to say, fill the other half with, you know, vegetables. Some are going to say, okay, have a little bit of meat, have a little seafood, have a little grains, you know, whatever. So that part, not everyone agrees on, but at least making the majority or a big bulk of your diet plants, I think that's pretty universally accepted. So I would say, make it plant-based. And then if you are choosing to consume animal products, you definitely want to consider the quality and consume the highest quality animal products you can find.
Preach. I mean, it's all about the plants. And I always say, just as long as you're eating more plants, that's all I really encourage and care about. Right. You know, this is not a vegan show. I'm not a vegan brand. It's just about eating more plants than you do crap. And you know, I think what's great about the book is that I can go to the plant section of the book, but you know, my boyfriend eats meat and I want to make sure he's eating the highest quality meat so I can educate myself on what to be buying at the grocery store. Or if I had kids, you know, and they're eating dairy, I would want to make sure that I'm buying them the most health, you know, based dairy. So I think that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense that even though the book is very plant focused, it's tremendous that you put in the meat and the animal products, because us plant eaters still want to have meat eaters in our lives, and we want those meat eaters to be able to eat their healthiest too.
Right. I totally agree. And that's a big reason why I kind of kept it in. And one thing you'll notice is that there is no dietary dogma attached to the book. So it's not, you know, vegan or vegetarian or paleo or whatever. It's just about eating real food, and what percentage of plants to meat and everything else you decide is up to you. But whatever you are choosing, at least you know you're going to be choosing the highest quality, you know, healthiest foods.
Woot woot. Yeah. Yeah. And so back on plants, I mean, one of the major things that you go into detail on for each plant, and like literally like each plant possible, is how to store them so they don't go bad quickly, which like, yes, because even my plants go bad really quickly and it's the worst.
I know. When you spend all that money.
Yeah, I know. Like, and it's just so sad, you know, it's just the worst feeling. So, I mean, did you have to trial and error with all the plants? Because they all have kind of different storage tips. Or are there like some general storage tips that, you know, are in place for sort of genres of plants?
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a mix of both, like definitely a lot of trial and error. And also just looking a lot of research, you know, you'd be amazed that different universities and things will do studies on how do you keep cucumbers freshest longest and, you know, which drawer to put your fruit in, you know, it's just insane. So it's sort of a mix of, you know, looking at studies and research, and then also, you know, just firsthand is like experimenting with different things and seeing what works. So for example, one amazing tip I'm going to share with all these plant lovers listening in is with storing avocado.
Okay.
So we all know, we all love avocado, and we've all seen, you know, the little gifs and memes and stuff about how they go bad so quickly. And if you open one, if you're not going to eat the other half, you can basically throw it out because by the time you go back to it, it's going to be gross. But there is a way to store that other half so it doesn't go bad quickly. And so basically, whenever you cut it, you want to use the half without the pit and store the one with the pit. But you want to store it in a glass, like some sort of covered container where you have chopped onion. You could just chop the onion in half or in quarters. And basically, the volatile oils from the onion will keep your avocado fresh. So you just have to, you know, make sure obviously the container is sealed, keep it in your refrigerator. And if you, within 24 hours, your avocado will be pretty much pristine, maybe just the teeniest, tiniest bit of like browning, but like nothing compared to if it didn't have, you know, if it was just by itself. So that is probably my top tip is with the storing avocado.
My mind just blew. It blew. I didn't know that. I just thought you were going to say, just store it with the pit in it. And that's the end of the story. And I was going to be we already know that.
Yeah, no.
I was going to be like, don't buy the book. We already know everything. But now I'm like, buy the book because I didn't know that.
This will save you tons of avocado. And so it's quite interesting. You know, each food sort of has its own best way to select and best way to store.
Yeah, that's my favorite part. I mean, like even just going, I don't know, like to the grapefruit section, you know, you go through why it's healthy, vitamin C, fat burning, yada, yada. Then you talk about how to choose it, that it should be heavy for its size and firm, yet slightly springy when pressed. And then you tell us how to store it, room temperature, which is interesting because I've been storing mine in the fridge because I'm an idiot.
No, you're not. And you know, you could still put it in the fridge. And sometimes I like it cold. And then definitely, obviously, if it's cut, you want to put it in the fridge. But, you know, it depends how quickly you're going to eat things, how you're going to use things, how you're going to prepare things. But this definitely, the book definitely gives you some great guidelines and a great starting point.
Yeah, it's like head to toe on each vegetable. It's like a meet and greet, like, you know, introduction to every plant possible and everything you need to know about it from head to toe.
Exactly. That's what I wanted people to see, how amazing they are. Because I'm sure, well, maybe not you. Did you feel like you've tried or had every single one of these fruits and veggies in there?
One thing, I don't think there was one plant that I haven't really played around with.
Jicama?
No, I've hung out with jicama. We've partied. You know, I'm not that well versed on mushrooms. I'm browsing through the book right now. I don't know that much about mushrooms.
Mushrooms are a great, great food in China. They're really revered as a longevity food. They're probably most well known for supporting immune system health. And one great thing about them is they're a great weight loss food because they're pretty low calorie and they're pretty filling and satisfying. And they're also a great meat substitute in the sense that it gives you that meaty sort of flavor and texture, but, you know, without the animal.
But this says here, never store mushrooms in a plastic bag or in an open container, both of which speed up their demise. Mm-hmm. Refrigerate them in a closed paper bag. Mm-hmm. Did not know that.
that will keep them fresher longer. Because you'll notice sometimes if you keep them in the plastic bag, they start to go a bit slimy. Mm-hmm. And if you keep them in the paper bag, it just sort of prolongs them and keeps them fresher longer.
Wait, this also says to clean them, wipe them with a damp paper towel to remove the dirt. So you don't want to rinse them.
You know, you can. And to be quite honest with you, I do sometimes rinse them when I'm rushing and I'm just throwing them under the sink and taking them out. But technically, the preferred way is to, chefs will typically clean them with the damp paper towel.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That requires a lot of work, but I guess they're worth it. Okay, so another one that I've actually never cooked with fennel. That's the one. I've never hung out with fennel before.
Okay.
I enjoy fennel greatly in restaurants, but I've never like done anything with it myself.
Well, yeah. So maybe hopefully the book will kind of inspire you to experiment with it. Maybe that could be your new veggie for the week.
That's my new veggie for the week. It's so good for digestion.
It is. It's great. And it smells great. It smells smells a little bit like licorice.
Yeah. I love it in restaurants. I'm always stoked when it's on a salad. I've just never really done anything with it.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you could have it raw. It's great like when it's sliced really thin, like you can slice it on a mandolin. Yeah. Or it's also great cooked as well.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about these fresh paper produce saver sheets, because I never heard of this. And then you mention it and it sounds amazing.
So those are sheets which have a sort of proprietary blend of spices infused in them. And they are used to help just prolong the shelf life of your produce. So for example, if you stick them in your berry bin or whatever, they should help keep your produce fresher longer and just prevent it from going bad as quickly as it normally would.
I got to try those. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Really helpful. So another thing that you mentioned in your book is about food, you know, being expensive. And I love the section called Real Food, Real Affordable. And it's really interesting to me how you say that healthy food being expensive is kind of all in our head, which I think is such a great point. You know, you say when you take into account the real cost of cheap food, you know, the excess weight, the health problems, and then all the doctor's medications that come along with it, like you're not spending much money on the food because it's cheap food, but you're probably spending it elsewhere. So that was really a great perspective. And I'm curious what some tips are you have to make healthy eating more affordable.
Yeah. So I think first is the sort of the mindset that you could pay the farmer now or the doctor later.
You can pay the farmer now or you can pay the doctor later. I like that.
That's not my quote. I took that from somewhere.
That's okay. I really like it.
But it's the truth, right? So we know that when we eat a diet full of junk food and processed foods, eventually, you know, our body breaks down.
Yeah, I don't like that much.
Yeah. And then even like just being in the dressing room, right? Like when you don't feel good and, you know, you're spending money on the body shapers and like all of these things, you know, we could be spending that on like healthy food to start. So
right.
I think there are, you know, a few ways to save money on healthy groceries. So first of all, when it comes to produce, frozen produce actually is a good option.
Yes, 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 yes. I tell people this all the time, and I think people really doubt me when I say that.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. And especially us living here on the East Coast, most of our food is coming from the West Coast or really all around the world. And, you know, when a food is ripe, it's typically at its most, it has its most nutrients. And after it's picked and the nutrients tend to decrease. And when it's not ripe, there's less nutrients in it. And so here on the East Coast, the produce that we have that looks fresh to us may have been traveling to us, you know, for weeks, or maybe it has been stored, you know, in a warehouse for a few days or even a week before it got to us or even longer than that. And so the food that we're eating is not necessarily just picked. It could be picked weeks ago. And because of that, it's not necessarily the most nutritious in terms of when you're comparing it to, you know, that food, right? But if you're having frozen produce, the same item, those items are picked when they are at their peak ripeness and they're flash frozen right away, which locks in the majority of the nutrients. So while fresh fruit is great, frozen food is still a great option because it's just as, if not more, nutritious than the fresh stuff.
I'm so glad to have, you know, someone like you reaffirm that, because I like live off of frozen plants. I mean, they don't go bad. You know, I was just saying all my plants go bad. Mm-hmm. Frozen ones don't. And you don't need to eat them all at once. And you can do so much with them. What I found interesting, though, is that you say not to boil frozen veggies, which is all I do with them. Because when I've steamed them, they've gotten way too mushy.
Well, boiling them helps you eat them, then you still want to do it. But what happens is when you boil them, the water-soluble nutrients are leached out into the water. And unless you're drinking the water, you know, you're probably throwing those nutrients down the sink. So
that makes sense.
That's why, whether
interesting,
it's, you know, this sort of holds across the board, whether it's frozen or even fresh vegetables, to retain the most of the water-soluble nutrients, you want to steam them or cook them in some way other than boiling.
How else would you eat peas? Would you, like, if you were eating frozen peas or frozen edamame, would you just steam it?
You could steam it. I mean, again, I'm not going to lie. Like, there are times when I'm trying to do things quickly. And so, for example, Sometimes when I'm making pasta, I make chickpea pasta. And
I had it last night.
Oh, it's the best ever, right? Mm-hmm. So like a minute or two, however many minutes I need to like boil, like, let's say the peas, I'll literally just throw them in the same pot with the pasta for the last like minute or two, whatever it needs, and then dump it all out together. So it's just like one pot, no mess.
Nice.
So, you know, again, there are ideal things, but I don't think we necessarily need to do everything all the time. We have to fit things into our modern lifestyle. So if you can, when you can, try and steam them or cook them in a different way as opposed to boiling when you can.
Well, I think that's really important what you just said. I think your book is meant to be, I guess, you correct me if I'm wrong, like the best case scenario, right? Because, I mean, you do say in there that boiling it isn't as good as steaming it. But I think somebody reading it shouldn't now panic if they boil their peas and be like, oh, shit, I should just get
just
you know, Ruby Tuesdays instead. I don't know where that just came from. But yeah, it's just whatever. Right? It's like your best case scenario. But let's all calm down and do the best we can. And would you agree with me that at the end of the day, if you're eating more plants than you do crap, even if you're boiling them, it's all good?
Exactly. I totally agree.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to get that in writing. No. Okay, so I'm curious what your favorite topic was to write about in the book.
Well, I think my favorite topic, well, I would say there's two. So the second chapter is all about the food and health connection. And I know personally, when I was growing up, I thought food only affected our weight. I didn't realize it affected our skin, it affected our cancer risk, our heart health, our mood, our, you know, even our intellectual ability and memory and all of these things. And so I really love chapter two because it helps us draw the connection between what we eat and how we feel and what our health looks like. So that was a really fun chapter. And then I also loved the chapter on spices, which unfortunately was cut, but I do have it available as a PDF download on my website.
Yeah, as a bonus, right?
Yes. And that's on mariamarlow.com/real-food-guide.
And we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. So that's a free download. It was a huge chapter. And I think spices are such an amazing food or an integral part to cooking because A, they impart so much flavor. So you can take what's ordinarily a boring meal and really jazz it up simply by adding different spices. And B, they're very medicinal. You know, all the different spices have different benefits. And, you know, for example, turmeric is sort of having a moment now where it's
really hot.
Exactly, right, for all of its health benefits. And so, you know, all of these, whether it's oregano or thyme or rosemary, there's so many interesting health benefits to each of these things. And so it was really interesting researching sort of the history and how they've been used traditionally and what they do for our body. And I just found the spice section fascinating.
Well, gee, thanks for cutting that out of your book. Really appreciate that one.
I fought to keep it in, but I was overpowered, unfortunately.
Oh, man. So because it was long?
Yeah.
So we have to talk about the trailer for the book. We have to.
Oh, my God.
Because yours truly makes a cameo in it.
This was the best. Your part was the best. Talia, you're hysterical.
thanks. I had so much fun. So we went – did a little Instagram stories thing on our shooting day, but I mean, that's only up for 24 hours. So if you missed it, which I'm probably sure you did, then you missed it. But we filmed this hilarious book trailer in a grocery store, and I got to live out one of my lifelong dreams of being a checkout cashier person, which was a freaking blast. And we frolicked about the grocery store and you told us about Real Food.
Yes, it's the trailer is super funny and it's all about sort of the mishaps and the problems and the frustrations and confusions we have in the grocery store. And just kind of walk you through all of that and how the Real Food Grocery Guide can sort of help be that little light bulb and be your handy dandy tour guide through that jungle that is the grocery store and make it a lot easier for you.
It's so fun. And it's also on the link that we're posting in the show notes where we can get all the information about your book. So I highly suggest you watching that just for a good laugh and a smile.
Yes, for sure.
It's a hoot. So I've asked you these questions before last time you were on, but I figured I'll ask you again because maybe some of them have changed.
Okay.
So what is your favorite plant party restaurant? I don't remember what you said last time, so we'll see.
I don't remember what I said last time either, but I think it's long enough that there's a new restaurant. ABCB is now my favorite restaurant.
Shout out to Neil.
Yes, you had Neil on the podcast. He's a friend and he's an amazing chef. So when you're in New York City, you have to check out ABCB.
Right. That was not plugged. I promise you guys. I did not tell her to say that. Neither did Neil. Nobody told her that. It's delicious. It's incredible. Okay, great. So what is your favorite plant to eat these days? Probably last time it was like something very wintry, like sweet potato or...
I think it was sweet potato and I almost want to say sweet potato again. Either sweet potato or chickpeas.
Oh, what do you do with chickpeas?
Oh, everything. I love them. I just made a chickpea burger.
Ooh.
Chickpea burger is amazing. I love hummus. Pretty much anything with a chickpea in, I will eat.
Do you have a recipe for a chickpea burger?
I do. I have a delicious recipe for chickpea burger on my site.
Okay. We're going to link to that in the show notes and I am going to make that immediately.
You should. Yeah.
What would you say your most used kitchen tool is?
At this moment, this is going to be the same. It's my chef's knife.
I was just going to say, last time you said your knife.
I'm always chopping all my vegetables.
That's great. That's so good. That's great. So last time someone asked you to clarify what the knife was, it's, tell me again.
It's Meissen.
M-I-S-E-N, right?
Yes. And you could order that online.
And there's only one paring knife, the little knife, and they only make one chef's knife.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
So it's not just like a specific model.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is a new question. I just want to ask you because I feel like in your book, you mention a bunch of different documentaries. I'm curious if there's one or two like food-based documentaries that you're really into.
I've seen so many over the years. I would say one of my favorites would be Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, mm-hmm. simply because I think it has a good storyline and I think it's very inspiring. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The guy in the trailer, drive, Joe Cross is driving across. He's fat and then he loses weight with plants and he juices in the back of his truck and it's amazing, right?
Yes.
Yes. It's really great.
So I love that. I like made my dad, like I had to pin him to the chair and I made him watch that and my brother and my whole family. So
that's a
good one. And then also like Food Inc. Wait, mm-hmm. Food Inc. is it?
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. classic.
That's
Those are both really good. Food Inc. changed so many lives because mm-hmm. that really goes into the, you know, the pen with the chickens and shows you what really goes on. And you don't want to know, but you should know.
Right.
Right. Okay. What's a book that's inspired you to write this book? Is that a weird question?
No, that's a great question. Let's see. I would say a book that's inspired me to write this book. I really like the book Eating on the Wild Side by Jo Robinson.
Hmm.
And she talks specifically just about different plants and why eating wild plants or heirloom plants, the traditional ones, not the highly cultivated crops that we find in the regular grocery store, how they're so much more nutritious and how we can benefit from eating more wild plants. So that's definitely a great, was an inspiration.
Wow, cool. Interesting. So, well, on that note, again, where can everybody go to buy your book?
It's available in all major bookstores, Barnes & Noble. It's available on Amazon, your favorite bookstore. But to find it online, you could go to mariamarlowe.com. That's M-A-R-L-O-W-E. And mariamarlowe.com/real-food-guide. And that will take you directly to the page about the Real Food Grocery Guide, which has the book trailer on it, has some more information, some testimonials and praise from various nutrition experts. And that's where you'll also find the bonus content, the super spices and superfoods, and the brand picks guide.
Perfect. Or we could just go to your homepage and you'll see a link for it right there, right?
Yeah,
we can do that. We can do that too. And you can find it in many different ways. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show for the second flip in time. It's been a blast, and it was so much fun being in your book trailer, and I wish you all the best of luck getting this grocery guide in as many hands as possible.
Thank you, Talia.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Feeling inspired to party with a new plant this week? I'm going to shoot to hang with shrooms some more. You know, I wasn't just tooting Maria's horn by telling her how much I dig her book. It's really a cool book about the ins and outs of every single plant, and I seriously suggest you check it out on partyinmyplants.com/35. And a big fit thank you to Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder for sponsoring this episode. Sun Warrior is the best tasting and texturing plant-based protein powder and the number one product I recommend to help plant lovers get fitter. Hey, if there's someone that you think could benefit from this show in their ears, please share it with them. The more people plant partying, the better, don't you think? For all the notes from this episode, plus so much more that takes the hell out of healthy living, hop on over to partyinmyplants.com/35.